This is the Faraway Farm Boy Podcast, episode number 27. My guest today is a Holstein enthusiast and breeder from Park Lake, Alberta, who is no stranger to the podcast. Please welcome my friend Leighton Slingerland. Leighton, welcome back to the podcast. Good to see you again.
Yeah, nice to see you too.
It's good to see your barn and all the nice cows. What's your favorite cow?
Well, I think my favorite cow now is she's an avalanche out of a manifold. She's 88 points in the second calver. She's giving lots of milk. We showed her Hanako heifer calf. It's one of the oldest Hanakos in the world. Showed her in Red Deer. And you saw her, but you don't remember her.
So. I do not. That's her calf?
Yeah, that's her calf.
Was that the first one we seen when we walked into the barn? One of the first ones?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, there's a bunch of nice ones. I can't remember them all. And I can't remember all the families, too.
No.
I try. I can't either. But you got a lot of nice big-framed cows.
Yeah. So, yeah, lots of that is... A bunch of that is, investing in good families, I guess. Good genetics. We really try to breed for a correct, balanced cow.
Yeah.
With good rumps, lots of chest width, and we're really working on now our fore attachments. And, yeah. So, yeah, sometimes, it's 5 years ago, five, 7 years ago, our rumps were just terrible. Our thurls were feet and legs, everything connected to the rump, and that was our worst part, so we really worked on that. Now we have, on average, I think we have really good rumped cows now.
Yeah, that's the first thing I seen when I went in there, yeah.
Yeah, so now we're working on lengthening out our fore attachments, and that's a breed weakness, I guess, a little bit, but
yeah,
we're getting there. We have some pretty nice 2-year-olds right now that have really good fore attachments, so.
Yeah, that's a big thing, right? I always look at that too, rumps. I don't know why. It's probably not the right way of looking at a cow, but rumps and then fore attachment.
Yeah.
And then, just that rib and stuff like that. And then, but you always point out chest width. All the cows I looked at rump and then, fore attachment. And then you would point out chest width. That's something I would totally miss, right?
Yeah.
But it's so important too. To have nice wide cows, but then I'd look at chest width, and then right away I'd look at the rear pin width too, and see if that kind of if she was a wider cow all throughout, then it was if she had the rump angle and that, then it was basically she's a great cow. And then I looked at fore attachment again, then it was actually but there's definitely a few in your barn that had it all right.
Yeah, couple.
Those big cows, they're so nice. And I was just thinking of my own herd. I have a lot of heifers right now, probably 40-50% heifers.
Okay.
But you probably got 20% or something. I didn't see too many heifers in there.
Yeah, it's probably more. Yeah, it could be right. It's probably more 25-30, but.
Because all those old cows, they're in their fourth or fifth lactation.
Yeah, we have a lot of third, fourth.
That's where the money's at, right?
Yeah.
Ideally, that's what my herd should be at too, right? Yeah. But that's all going to change, is what you're telling me.
Yeah.
You
just have to,
flush all your cows and keep all the heifers and sex semen. Sex semen on everyone.
Yeah. No, you can't do that because then you run into problems with way too many heifers.
Yeah, so I guess... Yeah, we were saying, you have to calve them all in to see which ones are good.
Yeah.
But as soon as you get that heifer pregnant, you're committed, right? That's an expensive part of that cow's life. Yeah. She's not paying off,
Yeah, for sure. That's one thing we have to improve on. We show cows, so lots of times those are the heifers. Not lots of times. Every now and then we, keep them as kind of pets because they don't get bred after their third service or their fourth, and then breed them one more time kind of, and then they get pregnant, but then they're by that time
they're fat.
Calve. Yeah. And they're never as productive as a cow that gets like for service at 12, 13 months and comes in and just everything goes right. But yeah, so we have to do a little better managing that because you can't keep everything. Put stress on your top end in your barn because all the bottom end, the heifers that you should have culled, they're in your barn taking up space and bunk space and stalls. So that's less room for your better heifers to develop in your barn, I guess.
But some of those old cows, you just can't get rid of them, right?
No.
Like they're doing fine,
yeah.
Those fourth and fifth lactation cows. And, you know, the numbers will say that all the heifers in your feedlots out, or not your, you know, your yard outside they're going to be better than those old cows, right?
Yeah, I know. That's...
But it's a tough...
If you do the right mating, like we use the, Select and Western, they both do a mating guide for us. So we kind of look at that as like a guideline-ish,
right.
But we'll still pick a bull, off of those, or... totally separate if we think another bull is going to work way better. Like,
yeah,
if one has a short fore attachment and both of the bulls on the mating guide don't have longer fore attachments or better fore attachments, we'll pick one that has better fore attachment and kind of keeps the cow makes them a little better.
Yeah. So what actually led to your giant herd of heifers outside? Like, what? You just had a lot of sex semen that you used on everyone, or?
Yeah, I don't know. We actually don't get that many bulls. Like, even... Yeah, now...
That's what the sex semen is for. Yeah, you don't get that many bulls.
No, but even... We don't breed more than, like, maybe 40%, 30% sex semen, But, even with conventional semen, like, we don't get that many bulls, actually. 1 year, I know we look like...
Well, you get 50% just like anyone else, don't you?
Well, I think we have more than 50% of heifers.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Shoot.
I don't know. Like.
That's good. That's a good problem, I guess.
I know. It's a good problem to have.
You're paying for conventional semen, but you're getting all heifers.
Well,
or not all, but...
Not all, because usually still your favorite cows will have a bull.
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah.
Even if you use sex semen. But.
Yeah. Yeah, I worked at a place once where they were using sex and they got 11 bull calves in a row.
Oh, wow.
Like, just throughout the herd or whatever.
Yeah.
They had a little chat with the semen rep after that. Yeah, it was good.
Yeah.
Springtime's right around the corner. How many acres do you guys farm?
Yeah, we have, not very much. So we rent two 40-acre pieces and then we have a home quarter, so 160 acres.
Oh, yeah.
So not very much at all.
Yeah. So you guys buy a lot of your feed and stuff?
No, actually we haven't yet, but... So we have 80 acres in hay, and then...
Oh, you don't buy your forages, you mean?
No.
Well, you buy your mash and stuff, or...?
Yeah, we buy
the
greens,
yeah.
Yeah. We'd like to... Yeah, I don't know, we're kind of in feedlot alley, so it's harder to just buy a quarter of land.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because it's... Most of them are snatched up, before they're even for sale, so...
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, eventually we'd like to expand, but I think we'll have to go to another location for that. Either somewhere around Southern Alberta or, I don't know, Saskatchewan maybe, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, that's where the future is, I think, right?
It's not like land is expensive compared to BC, but, and in BC people still manage to grow somehow, but.
Yeah.
It's just different.
Using old money, I guess.
Yeah.
To buy investment property.
Yeah.
It's not really farmable land. Well, it's farmable, but...
Yeah.
Yeah. How has COVID affected you guys on the farm? You guys don't give a shit, or what?
No.
All the visitors have to gown up and stuff, but, you know... you change visiting hours.
Now we take naps at different times of the day, so the salesmen never show up. No. Same as you, probably, I don't know, maybe the first month or two, the salesmen were a little bit leery about coming out, but
yeah,
we yeah, I'm pretty sure most people figured out after a while that it's all a bunch of horse shit anyways, so.
Yeah, is that, what do you think personally, like?
I don't know. I think if you're old and you're at risk, or even if you're just at risk, right, then, yeah, by all means wear a mask, but don't force everything else on everyone else.
Yeah, I kind of feel the same way. But I guess it's, like, we have the, you know, benefit of feeling that way because we're young and healthy.
Yeah,
I guess, but
for sure.
Yeah, Steph, I think a lot of people are over it, especially in our area. Like see a lot of people without masks and whatever. My wife and I actually have this game where we try to get away with not wearing a mask, like in every store we go to now. You know, it sounds kind of obnoxious, the people that might be concerned about it, but. Then you always have it in your pocket or something. So if you see someone at the door, like, looking at you funny, then you got that thing ready to put on just in case they start, you know, towards you or something, right? But we always come home from town with a news story. Oh, I went in, you know, a hardware store without a mask and, you know, trying to one-up each other. It provides some benefit.
Some fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's not much else to do.
No. Yeah, but... Yeah, lots of folks around our area pretty upset about shutting down churches and stuff like that, too.
Yeah, for sure.
Did you guys' church shut down, or...?
Nope. They're up at... They're, what, 50% or...?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, same as ours, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, yeah. A lot of folks pretty over it, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. I don't know too many. I don't talk to too many people that are all worried about it anymore.
But I mean, we're in the country, and in the city, I think there's.
Yeah, even in the city, I think they're kind of.
You think so?
I think so.
They tend to vote a different way too, though, in the city.
But I think it's two extremes. Like, either they don't want to wear a mask, or they. Like, wear a mask and lock down everything.
Yeah.
I don't think there's much of, like lots of farmers are kind of, like, in between. Like, don't really care either way.
Yeah.
And in cities, I think you have more of the extremes. I could be wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. What's next for your herd?
I don't know. I have a 92-point cow, so maybe try to get 93.
Which one is that?
She's a McCutcheon. She went 92 as third lactation.
I'm trying to remember that one when we walked through the barn.
I got her up. She was really wide.
You got all of them up.
True. Yeah. Yeah, this one.
Huh.
Yeah.
92 points?
Yeah. She's 92 points, 93 points on her mat rate. And then I think her rump is her worst score. I forget what her breakdown is, but... She was never, like, a show cow. She's, like, just wide and really... She's built correct. Like, a really good milker. We tried to show her, but she's... You take it... Like, you can later find in the barn or around cows in the... Yeah, like, in the alley. If you have a halter on her, she'll walk like a dream. And you take her out of her environment, and she's just a... She's just a bag, so we gave up showing her.
Yeah, there's one that I seen in Red Deer that was acting up, and they tried a few different people on her to try. That happens, eh?
Yeah.
What's the, like, the guy just didn't prep her enough, or?
Yeah, or you never know, they could be coming into heat or something.
Right, yeah.
Or if they have too much milk in them or something, they just get antsy, right?
Yeah.
Just want to lay down or usually on our farm it's that we didn't lead them long enough before,
so they're a little bit lazy,
so we're in the show ring and they're still being trained a little bit, so that's
what's the next show coming up.
I think there's the Leduc show. I think that's in the summer. I forget. I don't know exactly when it is, but there's the Alberta Dairy Congress that's in Leduc, and then our Green Acres show is going to be postponed a couple months. I think that's in July. if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I think I seen that email somewhere back there.
Yeah. And then maybe the BC Spring Show will be in the summer, but I'm not 100% sure about that either.
You guys take any to the national? Oh, I know you did when it was in Calgary, but...
Yeah, just when it was in Calgary. Otherwise, because it goes a western province and then...
Yeah, it's in Ottawa this year.
Yeah, so that's too far.
I'll be there.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was on the Young Leaders group.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that what you're doing?
Yeah. Where did you go?
When I was in Alberta.
Oh, that's funny.
That was some good times, but...
Yeah. Yeah, it's always good to get together with other dairy folks.
Yeah, for sure.
I know we did a course once, and it was like it had a national scope or whatever. Okay. So lots of guys our age, like from Ontario and stuff. And yeah, we always gave them a hard time about being from Ontario. But yeah, that was fun.
It's really cool because, now I still like chat with those guys every now and then.
Oh, yeah.
Meet from like all over Canada, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Just, expands your people you know, I guess.
Oh, yeah, it's fun. Yeah, that's it's a big part of why I do the podcast, just to expand the people you know. And it's so fun, like, oh, you know so-and-so, and then, everyone kind of knows each other, actually, or in our area, everyone's related, too.
Yeah.
Right?
I must like
Alliance. Well, I think I'm actually related to you, right?
I have no clue.
Maybe that was someone else. Oh, I think that was Eric Vanderveen, actually.
Okay.
I totally forgot that I was related to him. I think he's my third cousin or something, but that was funny.
Yeah, I hope I'm not related to you.
We all came over on the same boat.
Yeah.
No, yeah, because you married my cousin, but that's on my mom's side.
Okay.
Yeah, so no worries.
So I'm not related to you. Maybe by marriage, but...
Yeah. We all came over on the same boat at some point. Mm-hmm. But I as far as the shows and stuff, I'm not really in the loop. Like, I don't even know when the next classification round is. Okay. When is that? Because I got a few that I'm really eyeing up that I want to show.
Good.
It'll be good.
I think they try to come every 4 months, right? So if they came in January, they should be coming June, maybe? May, June.
Give Diamond Park a run for its money.
Yeah. Someone has to.
Yeah.
No, there's lots of herds there's lots of herds around here and in Alberta that we really look up to.
Yeah.
Like, one thing we could do a lot better is our milk production and... Yeah, our Vanderkoy and the Vanderkoys, they have really, really good cows.
Yeah.
You think we have good cows, you go there, they're way better yet.
Yeah, he has really nice cows. Big ones, too, and big framed.
Yeah.
And really good production.
Yeah, for sure.
But he can't eat more than we can, so take that hard. Yeah. But we'll get there eventually, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a long road, though, if you want to build your herd. Like, what's the best, if you had to do it all over again, what's the best way to build a herd over the course of maybe, a couple generations?
Like
flush a couple of your best animals, or?
Yeah, I think so. I think you just have to keep the strength in there and mate with good udders. I don't know. Good feet and legs, good udders. Keep the rumps low. You kind of have to... Yeah, have the ideal cow in mind when you're doing mating guides, right? Or, doing a mating on a cow, because if you pick if your cow is tall and doesn't have very much width, and you breed her to something that doesn't have very much width and just as tall, you're not going to get a nice, wide, balanced cow.
Yeah, I mean, that's a pretty low-level look at it, but you think it's that simple, like...
You just always have to focus on correcting the trait, I think. Because like 5 years ago, our rumps were, one of our rumps and our feet, the feet and legs were by far the worst in our herd.
Hmm.
But now they're getting a lot better.
Yeah.
And now we're working on other traits like chest width. Chest width, we're working on, yeah, some of our cows are a little bit narrow. Lots of them are pretty wide, but yeah, chest width and fore attachments rear at our height a little bit and width, but.
Mm-hmm. What about like your like mastitis resistance and stuff like that? How often do you look at that when you're looking for bulls?
Not really. We don't really look at that unless it's.
What do you call those, like, trait, what do you call those traits, like the...
Like the health traits?
Yeah, health traits, yeah.
Yeah, we don't, I don't know, we don't really look at that, because, yeah, I think if you have a correct cow, that's going to last a lot longer than if you have a, if you only breed for health traits. I think you'll get further... You'll get further by breeding a balanced cow that's functional, has good feet and legs, and all the right parts.
Yeah.
Then, and that'll be a more productive cow, I think, than if you only breed for health traits. Because
yeah.
A big part of health traits is management, right? So if you have...
I know, yeah. I would say like 90% of
it.
But.
So if you only breed for health traits and you kind of forget the conformation of the cow...
Yeah.
Your cows could, like, have terrible rumps or something, right?
Yeah.
And theirs are going to fall apart, not because of health traits. It just...
Yeah. Well, I don't think anyone breeds just on health traits. No. But, like,
some,
how... Yeah.
Some do.
Like, you're probably looking at cows that, you know, are really good with conformation, but maybe have a minus with health
yeah.
traits. Does that, like, turn you off of that bull, or does everything have to be a plus? When it comes to health traits, or?
No, you usually have to, lots of times you don't have to, but if you want to use the highest, sometimes you have to sacrifice, like, one trait, like, a little bit less than, like, say you use, like, a bull of, like, 20 conformation versus, or, like, 16 conformation versus 20. The 20 is way higher, so you might use it to get a high...
Those ones that are 20, though, I never put too much faith in them because, like, when their proof comes out,
yeah.
you know, then it drops to 10.
But if they're from a classified dam and good and a proven sire,
right.
I think you have to look at more than just the bull's breakdown, I think. You have to look at, like, is it out of a good family, the bull?
Yeah.
Is the sire a... reputable sire, like
when you're looking at, like, what your next generation is going to do, how much weight do you place on that cow's family? Like we were saying before, that, you know, you'll have a one-off excellent, right?
Yeah.
And then you'll expect her daughters to be, you know, excellent. You'll just expect that excellent generation, you know, is gonna continue, right? How could it not, right?
Yeah, I don't know. You still have to, yeah.
Because let's say you buy a cow that's like, you know, five generations excellent or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, you're pretty sure that her next generation is going to be excellent. You can put some weight on that, right?
Yeah.
But when you have your one-off excellent cow and you expect her daughters to be excellent for the next 10 generations,
you can't expect that. Every now and then it works.
Yeah. I know. Yeah.
And, yeah, it's like all families, they have good cow families, they have to start somewhere.
Right? That's right, yeah.
So maybe the one-off is the start of a 10 generations very good excellent, right? You don't know that, no. So.
Yeah, out of your Angus bull or whatever, right?
Well, I wouldn't expect much from that, but...
Never know. You never know, Layton.
But I think you can minimize your risk by using more proven sires than... genomic sires.
Yeah.
Like by not chasing numbers, you just chase correct.
Yeah.
Because I think that's, yeah. Some AI companies are trying to chase more numbers.
So what percentage of your bulls are proven versus...
we're probably at, I would say 30-70. 30% proven in the rest genomic.
Oh, so what you just said is actually just horseshit.
No, that is true. We should be putting more focus on proven.
That's what you think, yeah.
But it's, I don't know, it's more risky to use genomic studies, right? Because if you have five generations of very good or excellent cows, and you breed it to a genomic...
Wait, you're saying that you use 70% proven?
No, 70% genomic we use.
And it's more risky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you don't know, right?
Yeah.
What they're going to turn out, because there's not any classified daughters or something yet, right? Versus if you use a proven bull, you're minimizing your risk compared to using a genomic sire, because you know that this bull has so many daughters that are classified very good, and you know what udders look like on the, like from other daughters from that bull.
Yeah.
And how they milk.
Yeah.
That's what I've heard. I've asked other farms, like well-known, like master breeder farms, and that's what they say. They use like 90-95% proven bulls, right?
Really?
So then you really, really have to try hard to screw up.
Yeah.
Like, I know it can happen on anything, right? But it's a lot less risk, and it makes you look like all of your breeding decisions are smart choices, right?
Yeah. That's interesting that, like, most of them that you talk to were using mostly proven.
Well, I don't know about mostly, but definitely.
Sure, it's anecdotal, more, but yeah. Huh.
I think sometimes we focus a little too much on, like, numbers. Well, we do look, like, we don't just go off of, like, the mating guide or whatever. So we do look at a cow and be like, okay, her pins are, like, borderline high. We definitely can't use a bull that has high pins. Like, we'll use, like, a 2 or 3 low with...
Yeah, like, will you correct it, like, extremely, or, like, no, just use a balanced cow,
yeah,
or a balanced bull, yeah. Huh. Yeah, because, like, I don't know about the, if you're going to correct it and you go from one extreme to the next, I don't know if that, like,
well, you could get through the one extreme.
Yeah. Right?
There's a bigger range in between
those
extremes, so you could get anything of that, right?
Yeah.
If you breed, like, an 8 high to an 8 low, you could... Your range is in between 8 high and 8 low.
Yeah.
Because you can, there's such a thing as too low of a rump too, right? So.
Yeah, that's true. Although you don't see it too often. No, but
not too often. But that's just as much of a fault, because right away their legs aren't under them.
Yeah.
Good. Or their throws are too far ahead, or.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yes, I've had a few of those.
That locomotion is a problem. Those don't last in your barn either.
Yeah, I've had a few of those that are like, you know, they look hunched over, and there's nothing wrong with their feet.
Yeah.
Like, you're always looking at their front feet. Oh, maybe she has a limp or something, right? Yeah. But there's nothing wrong. Yeah, just the, like you said, thorough placement and stuff is a bit off or something. So any babies on the way or what?
Nope.
Not that you want to let everyone know.
Not that we know of, yeah.
Cool.
Maybe if you leave, we can start. I don't know.
Yeah, you'd ever leave. Cool. Well, it was nice to sit down with you again. And thanks for showing me your barn. And
you betcha. Thanks for coming. We really like showing off our animals. We don't get that opportunity very often.
So. Yeah. Well, I only came so that way I can ask you to come over and I can show you all mine.
Sounds good.
Yeah. If people want to look up your prefix, it's Diamond Park, right?
Yeah, Diamond Park Dairy.
Sounds good. Well, thanks for coming on.
You betcha. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to the Faraway Farm Boy podcast, episode number 27, with Leighton Slingerland of Diamond Park Dairy. Join me again next week.